Okay, good evening. I want to thank the Bayit, Rabbi Karapkin, Rabbi Spitz, for inviting me, as well as others from the Beit Midrash, to speak. I want to thank the sponsors for dedicating the program this evening. I put a note in the chat with a link for a source sheet that I plan to refer to in the course of the discussion. I will also share my screen from time to time, but I much prefer seeing people as opposed to looking at the source sheet on my screen. So to the extent possible, I'm going to be keeping this keeping the sheet off of it. But again, you can just download the source sheet from the link that's now in the chat. There's a tremendous advantage to giving this share this way, as opposed to 1 a.m. In the Simcha suite. Two advantages, really. One advantage of doing the program this way is that I am more awake. The other advantage, I can't speak for you, but I am more awake. The other advantage to doing it this way is that it's only 30 minutes as opposed to 45 minutes to an hour. So therefore, the challenge of staying awake is not as great. I will ask for one thing in the course of the 30 minutes that we have, which is if people could please, if you have a question, ask it. Don't put it into the chat. If people write things in the chat to me during the shiur, then I get distracted. It's a lot easier for me if someone asks a question, then if I don't have time, then I'll say so. But that works better for me. So our topic for this evening, will COVID-19 kill Simchas Torah? Making up our missed reading. So three notes to begin. First of all, Simchas Torah does not actually require that we make a siyum on the Torah, that we actually have heard the entire Torah lane. Simchas Torah will not be canceled. That will make some people very happy, that will make some people very sad, but it is nonetheless the reality. Even in shuls where they do not read the missing parshios, Simchas Torah must go on. That's number one. Number two, very important, everything I say here is going to be in the realm of theory. The Marad Asra is going to announce Bayit policy closer to the time when we resume Shabbos davening together. And third, if the presentation tonight is not clear, good news. The bulletin that the shul puts out for Shavuos will include a paragraph from me in the weekly Halacha column on making up the missed Kriyas HaTorah. It's not going to include a lot of what we discuss in this half hour, obviously, but nonetheless, you'll get a good digest of the positions there. So here's our question. We stopped meeting on Shabbos after Parshas Kisisa. Since then, we've missed Vayakel Pekudei Vayikra Tzav Shmini Tazriya Mitzara Achrimos Kedoshim Emor Bahar Bechukosai and Bamidvar. So when we reopen, how many Torah readings do we perform? Do I have an obligation to make up the missed parshios? So you could look at this in terms of the issue of tircha de tzibura, communal strain, just how much patience would people have to sit through making up those parshios. We can barely make it through the Torah reading on a normal Shabbos. But that's one question. A second question is going to be a medical question. How long is it safe for us to be in a room together at the time of reopening? Would it be safe for everybody to be together long enough to go through those things? But let's pretend those weren't factors, because they in fact might not be factors. Rav Herschel Schechter is of the opinion that those who want to make it up can actually make it up a little bit at a time over a series of Shabbatot. So you could theoretically do the makeup without it being a tremendous burden and a medical hazard. But the question really is, pretending we have infinite attention spans or infinite opportunities, what do we do? Is there in fact an obligation to make it up? So the way that I'd like to handle this, I think, hang on one second. There we go. The way that I'd like to handle this is, first of all, to get a better understanding of what we are doing with the mitzvah of Kriyas HaTorah, the mitzvah of Torah reading. Who is obligated to read? Why is there an obligation to read? And what exactly are we obligated to read? Once we know that, once we have the answers to those questions, we will be able to explain reasons why we should or should not make up the missing readings, and then we'll conclude by looking at how contemporary halachic authorities have addressed this question in recent weeks. Again, I've noted in the chat, you can find the source sheet there. The end of the source sheet actually has links to five contemporary articles on this topic by leading halachic authorities. Okay. So, first of all, who is obligated to do the Torah reading? Let me ask you, is the mitzvah of Kriyas HaTorah, of Torah reading, is that a communal mitzvah, or is it a personal mitzvah on individuals? What would you say?
Communal.
Communal. Why do you say communal, Maury?
Because it seems to be the Tekken of Ezra, which was that we have three or so many days between to produce the Torah.
Okay, so it's a communal mitzvah because the community needs to hear Torah reading every X number of days. That's indeed one possibility. Anybody else want to make an argument? Okay, well, we'll go with communal and go from there. No, the truth of the matter is it's a really challenging issue because on the one hand, all of us are present in shul. On the other hand, only one person is... Sorry?
There's a comment made about requiring a minyan as well.
There's a comment made. So please don't write things in the chat. I'm going to ignore whatever's in the chat. You got to shout it out. But yes, the comment was made that you need a minyan. It's challenging because, look at it this way. You have one person reading, one person reciting brachos, maybe the same person, right? What is the role of everybody else there in the shul? Are they just there to populate the minyan? Because the question then is... If it's a communal thing, the way that was just argued, that in fact it's a communal mitzvah, then maybe if there is no community, there is no obligation. Maybe you could look at it that way. In truth, halachic authorities have debated this question for a very long time. And there are two main approaches along with a third side approach. The first approach says it is absolutely communal. And this is based on a comment by Tosfos in source number one. On the source sheet, and I'm going to share it for a little while so that those who did not download it will be able to see it, but then I'm going to bop right off of it, so it won't be there that long. But if you take a look at the first source on the sheet, Tosfos is talking about a shul in Alexandria, which was so large that you couldn't hear the chazan because it was large, not because people were talking. It was so large that people couldn't hear what was going on up front. And the question was, so what do you do? The Gemara in Sukkah asked, what do you do? How do you answer Amen? And Tosfos notes, as the Gemara says, when the time came to answer Amen, they would wave a cloth and the assembly would all declare Amen. That was the way they handled saying Amen. And Tosfos records a question from Rabbeinu Nissim Gaon. He says, we have a rule. You're not allowed to declare what's called an orphan amen, an amen where you didn't hear the bracha. But in Alexandria, they didn't hear the bracha. They only knew because somebody's waving cloths. That's how they knew. And the answer is, if you are obligated to say the bracha, then you actually are required to hear the bracha. If you have an obligation to say the bracha, then you have to hear it. But if it's not a bracha fulfilling an obligation on your behalf, it's just a bracha that someone is saying, you can say amen even if you didn't hear the bracha, you just know that somebody said it. Well, in Alexandria, they also did Torah reading, and not everybody could hear it. So the implication is, you didn't have to have everybody make that bracha. The person who makes the bracha on the Aliyah is not making it on behalf of everybody else. The person who's making the bracha is doing it personally. It's not everybody else's bracha, meaning it's not I, the Jew in the pew, sitting in shul, do not have a personal obligation. Someone has to go up there and read. Someone has to go up there and make a bracha. I participate in making the minyan, and that's it. And the truth of the matter is, as Maury noted before, the original sources in the Gemara about Kriyas HaTorah, about Torah reading, sound like it is indeed communal. It is for the children of Israel as a whole. Those who downloaded the source sheet will see that in sources number 2 and 3. It really is a communal enactment. Rav Herschel Schachter, in a shiur on the topic, noted that the Rav of Soloveitchik's grandfather, Chaim Brisker, felt that Torah reading is a personal obligation. However, his other grandfather, Velia Feinstein, said no. The Ramban in Maseches Megillah says it's a communal obligation. So that's one view. It's a communal obligation. If there's a minyan, do it. If there's no minyan, that's it. There's no obligation. It's over. That's one approach. Opposite pole. It's a personal obligation that we fulfill as part of a community, because you do, as was noted, you do need a minyan. And here I'm going to bop back to the source sheet so people can see the statement made, scrolling down to source number 4 on the source sheet. No, source number... Yes, source number 4, from Rav Moshe Feinstein. Rav Moshe Feinstein quotes the Magen Avraham, Rabbi Avraham Gambina, writing in the 17th century. He's talking about Kriyas HaTorah, about the Torah reading. And the Magen Avraham brought from the Knesset HaGedola that a minor may not be the reader. You can't have a minor be the reader or be the Baal Kriya. And the Prima got him challenged. What are you talking about? In the Gemara, they talked about counting a minor towards the seven Olim, even though back in the day, the Oleh, the person who got the Oleh, was the reader. So in the Gemara's time, they were okay with this person, the minor, being a reader. Why are you telling me that he can't? So he says, he responds, Rav Moshe says, it appears correct in my humble opinion to justify the Magen Avraham's words. We must say the following. The Torah reading is not like Megillah reading or Birkas HaMazon and similar brachos. Very often, you hear someone else make a bracha that is your personal obligation. They make the bracha. You answer amen, and it's as though you had made the bracha yourself. However, that's not the way it works when it comes to Torah reading. Rather, Torah reading imposes on each of us a personal obligation to hear the reading. My bracha, my mitzvah, I should say, like the end of source number 4, the essential rule, is not to declare the Torah reading, but specifically to listen to the Torah reading. The mitzvah is a personal mitzvah of listening. So again, to make sure that we're somewhat clear on this, I don't want to be too clear, I want to be somewhat clear. Tosfos takes the stance, and based on Tosfos we can say, the mitzvah of Torah reading is communal. You have a minyan? Mitzvah. You don't have a minyan? No mitzvah. However, the Magen Avraham, as explained by Rav Moshe, says no. The mitzvah is on each individual to hear the Torah read. Not to actually read it, but to hear the Torah read. And therefore, if there's no minyan, I still have an obligation. My obligation is still there. There's a third view which says a certain number of aliyos are personal obligations and then the rest are communal. But I'm not going there. I think we can confuse people enough with two views. We don't need a third view. So, practical application of saying this. If it's a communal mitzvah, there's no obligation to make it up. There was no minyan. Therefore, that's it. You're done. But if I say it's personal, then you have a need to make it up. That's point number one. Okay? The who question. Who is obligated? Second question. Why are we reading from the Torah? There are two different possibilities. One possibility is, I or the community needs to finish the Torah reading every X number of weeks. We have a one-year cycle. At times in Jewish history, communities had a three-year cycle. But there is a cycle. And by the end, you have to have completed it. Meaning, every week we get up to Lane and we pick up where we left off last week. And then next time we pick up where we left off last week until we get through the entire cycle. That's one way to look at it. The other way to look at it is to say no. Each Shabbos has a designated parsha. This past Shabbos was Bamidbar. This coming Shabbos, outside of Israel, there's no laning. It's Yontif. The following Shabbos is Parshas Naso. Which way do you think we go? Do we say that the mitzvah is just completed in the course of the cycle? Pick up where you left off last week and keep on going? Or is there an association of a particular Parsha with a particular Shabbos? What would you say? It's a hard question. Right? Gabi, what? Is that you? You can unmute yourself.
There seem to be certain parshas which are connected with a specific time in the year.
Right. Certain, Bamidbar, for example, is always read before Shavuos. Devarim is always read before Tisha B'Av. So there seems to be some kind of a connection for each association with it.
Right, good. We do have certain preferences in terms of the way things fall out. We do always need to make sure that Bechukosai is not read the Shabbos before Shavuos. That's why Bamidbar ends up being there. It's because we want to avoid Bechukosai being there. So that would be an example of it. Devarim being read the Shabbos before Tisha B'Av and Shabbos Chazon is another example. But that's not really about the cycle. It's about wanting to have certain associations or avoiding certain associations. We don't want the tochacha. We don't want the curses to be read on certain occasions, for example. So the truth of the matter is, it's really hard to argue. And I think really hard to argue that there is a specific kriya, a specific reading for a specific Shabbos. I think that's not...
Excuse me?
Yes.
This Shabbos, we're going to be out of sync with Israel.
That's correct. I'm getting there. You are 100% right, Mark. We're getting there. It's really hard to argue that there's a specific reading for a specific Shabbos. One point is what Mark just mentioned. I'm going to come right back to that. But there's a Gemara in Megillah which talks about it. The Gemara in Megillah talks about a fascinating problem. What if Parshas Shkalim, when we usually read the beginning of Kisisa as Maftir, what if that falls out on the week of Vayakhel, which is the week after Kisisa? Or it falls out on Tetzaveh, which is the week before Kisisa. And then it discusses what happens if it falls out on Kisisa. What if Kisisa is Shabbos Parsha Shkalim? Are you going to go back and read the beginning of Kisisa again as the Maftir? That's the Gemara's question. And if you take a look on your sheet, I will share the source sheet once again so that people can see it in front of them if they didn't download it from the link that's in the chat. But source number 5, if Parsha Shkalim occurs on the Shabbos of Tetzaveh, so what do you do? Rabbi Yitzchak Nafcha says, I'll tell you what you do. 6 aliyos from Tetzaveh to the end of Tetzaveh until Kisisa, and then 1, your 7th aliyos from the start of Parsha's Kisisa. Abaye says, no! Then people are going to just assume that the Chazan happened to stop in Kisisa. They won't realize it's a Maftir. Rather, you read 6 from Tetzaveh until through the start of Kisisa, and then you repeat the start of Kisisa as the 7th Aliyah. Now, this Gemara itself is a really, really interesting source. On the one hand, it seems to tell me that there is a fixed reading, where we care about where you begin and we care about where you end. Because otherwise, you could have solved the problem of Shkalim being Parshas Tetzaveh by saying, so I won't read all of Tetzaveh. I'll read 3/4 of Tetzaveh. I'll stop there, and then I'll jump to do Shkalim, and next week I'll start from where I left off in Tetzaveh. So you could argue that the fact that the Gemara does not consider that a valid solution, that indicates to me that, in fact, it's not a valid solution. You can't just stop mid-parsha. The week of Tetzaveh, read Tetzaveh. That's one way you could look at it. However, you could also look at this Gemara as proof that it's not so. There isn't an association between a particular parsha and a particular Shabbos. How can you prove it from that Gemara? When was the last time you ever saw Parshas Tetzaveh Bishkalim? I can answer this one for you. The answer is never. Shkalim will never, ever, ever be Tetzaveh. Shkalim will be Truma. That can happen. Shkalim, depending on whether it's a leap year or not a leap year, may end up being Pekudei. But Shkalim is never, ever going to be Tetzaveh. Clearly, the fact that at some point you had Tetzaveh be Parsha Shkalim tells me that you didn't have a fixed date for when it would be. It just didn't exist. And that view is... Yeah?
Couldn't it be that there was a 3-year cycle at the time instead of the 1-year cycle we have now?
Could you argue that that happened as a result of a 3-year cycle? Well, yes, except that they're calling it Tetzaveh. And if you're working with a 3-year cycle, there's no way you got from Tetzaveh till the beginning of Kisisa. It's too long. Right? You're working with parshas that are 1/3 as long. It's a clever idea, but I don't think it works. So I'm going to go back to the story sheet and show you a story which, depending on what kind of mood you're in, is either a great story or a terrible story. So I don't know what mood you're in. Hopefully it's a good one. Here's the story from Rabbi Yitzchak ben Moshe of Vienna, the Or Zarua. This story goes back, I think it's about 800-900 years. And my translation is here on the sheet. It happened in Cologne, Germany. Someone protested on the Shabbos when Emor should have been read. They got up in shul, they started yelling and screaming, delaying prayer and the Torah reading all day. Somebody got up in shul, made a fuss, nobody could hear themselves think, Kriyas HaTorah didn't happen. What do you do? Next Shabbos, Rabbi Eliezer, son of Rabbi Shimon, instructed them to start from Emor and read it, as well as Bahar, which was appropriate for that Shabbos, and not to skip a portion. Go back and read from where you were. Why? In the days of Moshe Rabbeinu, it has been enacted to read the portions of, it was enacted, I should have written, to read the portions of the Torah, to complete it annually, to announce the laws to the nation. Don't say, since the time of reading has passed, that portion is gone. There is no fixed portion. That's the position of the Or Zarua. The Chasam Sofer said something similar, discussing the question of what happens if a shul stopped reading mid-parsha, where do they pick up the next week? And in fact, as Mark noted, this is relevant starting next week, when Chutz La'aretz is going to be out of sync with Israel. If someone's traveling, are they allowed to, we're not traveling, but theoretically, if someone were traveling during the period of asynchronicity, would they be able to get an aliyah in the wrong place? And the answer would be, it depends. Do you have to read a particular parsha on a particular week or not? Upshot of this is that you could argue that there's a specific parsha for a specific Shabbos, or not. There are those who say, yes, there is. The Binyan Tzion says, yes, there is. The Or Zeruah clearly does not think so. Chasam Sofer did not think so. So why does this matter? What's the impact here? If my mitzvah is really not tied to a particular parsha for a particular Shabbos, then I'm not doing a makeup at all. I'm just picking up where I left off. That's fine. The last time I was in shul, Shabbos morning, we lay in Kisisa. I come back, we're going to start from Vayakel Pekudei. But if the mitzvah is to read a parsha on a particular week, then what I'm doing is really a makeup. And if I take the view that it's a makeup, maybe I should look at it like a missed tefillah, a missed davening. You know what happens. If somebody is planning on davening Maariv, and then they fall asleep, and they wake up the next morning, and it's too late for Maariv, what do? When they get to Shmona Esrei and Shacharis, they say Shmona Esrei twice. What if, instead of sleeping through Maariv, they slept through Mincha and through Maariv? They had a really good night. They slept through Mincha, and they slept through Maariv. Now what do you do the next morning? Do you say three Shmona Esreis? No! You can only make up one tefillah. That's all you can make up. And so that leads some to argue this is a makeup, and therefore, you can only make up one parsha. When the Shulchan Aruch quotes the Or Zeruah about making up the reading, the Vilna Gaon in his comments there, I brought it on the source sheet, but I'm running out of time, so I'm going to stop swapping back and forth. The Vilna Gaon in his Bir Agra says, yeah, making up the Torah reading, that's like making up tefillah. That's like making up davening, and that makes it sound like you should really only make up one. Rav Schechter notes, Rav Herschel Schechter notes, that the Vilna Gaon personally at one point needed to make up multiple parshios, and he did. But if you go by what he wrote in the Bir Agra, then you shouldn't. You should only make up one parsha, and no more than that. And that's in fact what the Mishnah Brura says, explaining the position of an earlier authority, the Maharam Mintz. The Mishnah Brura takes the position, it's in source number 10 for those who downloaded the sheet from my link. He says, if you miss several Shabbases, some say that one should only read the last portion which is adjacent on the following Shabbos. Some say you have to complete all the missed portions, but from the Bir Agra, he thinks, it seems he agrees with the first view. By the way, in number 7, I included a link to a shiur of mine that I gave on the discrepancy between Israel and outside of Israel and its halachic applications. But the bottom line is this, out of this point. We already said, if it's a communal obligation and there was no minyan, maybe you don't have to make it up. But number 2 now, if we're reading it as part of a cycle, and that's it. It's not about a particular parsha or a particular week. I can make up whatever I want. It's not a makeup. I'm just continuing where I left off. But if I take the view that it's a particular parsha for a particular week, maybe I can make up one, but I can't make up a dozen. That's not an option. Last of our three big questions. On any given week... Yeah. You know what? I'm going to actually... It's 9:23, so I'm going to stop taking questions at this point. I'm sorry. On any given week... What are we supposed to lean? Is it a designated section, or am I allowed to read more than that? Is there a cap on what we read? Even if there is a kavua parsha, is there a concept of adding? Rav Asher Weiss, in a piece that I brought on the source sheet, says, no, you're not allowed to do superfluous readings. You can't just decide, I want to take out a Torah and make brachos and have aliyos. Rav Herschel Schechter says, of course you can. The Mishnah in Megillah says on Shabbos, Mosifin, you're allowed to add Aliyos on Shabbos. That doesn't mean I take my Parsha and dice it up into 20 different sub-Aliyos. I can do that. But Mosifin means you can keep on reading more things. You just keep on adding, says Rav Schechter. And in fact, there's a Tosos that he quotes in Megillah to support that idea, which I think I brought on the source sheet. So in terms of what I read, maybe I actually am allowed to keep on adding. That's number one. But number two, is there a reason to say, maybe I'm limited, I can only read from one chumash? If you asked me that question, I would have said, why? Why can't I read from more than one chumash? However, the Maharam Mintz, a Rishon, an early German authority, says no. We never read more than one Chumash. Why is that? So Rav Herschel Schachter suggests that the reason is because the Gemara in Brachos regarding Shema says that when you say Shema, it has to be Kichsava, the way that it's written in the Torah. Rav Soloveitchik expanded that. And he said, it's not just for Shema, it's any time you have a mitzvah of reading Psukim, you have to read them the way they appear in the Torah. Well, the way that Kriyas HaTorah works, I'm reading from the Torah. There's a big gap between each Chumash. You can't jump that gap. So therefore, maybe there's a cap. I'm only allowed to read from one Chumash out of one Sefer Torah. I had another idea to explain it, but I'm going to skip my personal idea on this. The bottom line out of this section is this. Maybe I'm allowed to be strict and add, but maybe not. Maybe you're only allowed to read what you're supposed to read, and you're not allowed to add more, like Rav Asher Weiss suggested. That's number one. Number two, maybe we're limited to reading from just one Chumash in order to read the way that it's written in the Torah, and not jump the gap between the two Chumashim. So out of these three issues, number one, who is obligated? Community or individual? Number two, is the obligation to complete the entire Torah, or is it a particular reading on a particular Shabbos that this is a makeup? And number three, is there a cap on what we read in terms of what we would add, or in terms of reading from multiple Chumashim? Out of all of that emerged three reasons not to make up the missing readings, or some of them. Number one, this is the Shari Ephraim's position quoted in the Mishnah Brura. Torah reading is communal. There was no minyan, there's no obligation. That's position number one. Position number two, if the parsha isn't tied to that week, and I'm doing a makeup, I'm sorry, if the parsha is tied to that week, and I'm doing a makeup, then it's like making up davening. You can only make up one parsha. That's it. That's Maharam Mintz's position, as explained in the Mishnah Brura. And number three, if the Torah reading is tied to just one Chumash, as Rav Schachter contended, then we may only make up, or as they really, Rav Schachter explained the Maharam Mintz, then we're only allowed to make up one Chumash at a time, which means I could go back to Bamidbar and start from there. And that's it. So the question is, what do we do with these three arguments against making up all or part of the Torah reading? And would I be allowed to be strict even if I'm exempt? So I'm going to give you a digest of contemporary rulings. And again, for those who downloaded the source sheet from the chat, you have links to the articles by major halachic authorities on this point. The Sephardi chief rabbi of the state of Israel, Rabbi Yitzchak Yosef, as well as Kolel Eretz Chemda in Israel, they say, throw out all of those objections. All three objections, get rid of them. They're all wrong. They each argue their own way. Rav Yitzchak Yosef says no one agreed with the Shari Ephraim and the Maharam Mintz. The Kol Eretz Chemda argues more based on logic. And they say, therefore, shuls are obligated to make up the missed readings, even across Chumashim. Rav Yosef Tzvi Rimon, the Rav of Alon Shvut South, contends that we are obligated to make up the missing readings. You are allowed to make up more than one reading on a Shabbos, but you may not read more than one Chumash. That's the position of Rav Rimon. Rav Herschel Schachter says, shuls don't have to make it up. You have these grounds for not making it up, like the Shari Ephraim saying that it's a communal mitzvah. However, he says, if you want, you could do it. You can take it on. It's a hosafa. You're just adding aliyos. That's all. It's a hosafa, and he believes that you're able to do it at the end of the Torah reading. He even says you could do it on multiple Shabbases. That's the position of Rav Schachter. And then finally, Rav Asher Weiss. Rav Asher Weiss says you're not allowed to make them up. He says you have these lenient views that say don't do it, and he says you're not allowed to add readings. So if they are right, then you are actually violating halacha by calling people up for unnecessary aliyos. And therefore, Rav Asher Weiss argues, you're not allowed to make it up. So you have a range of views, ranging from do it, to don't you dare do it, and options that are in between. Again, a summary of the positions will be in the Bayit Bulletin, God willing, coming out tomorrow, so you can see the summary there. Feel free to email me also with questions and desire for clarification, because I know that I went very quickly with all of this. One thing I did not address is, if you're making it up, how do you do that? Do you do it all in the Kohen Aliyah? Do you do it by balancing the Aliyos among all the readings? Do you do it at the end? That's its own debate, which maybe we'll discuss on some other occasion. Thank you very, very much for the opportunity. And Chag Sameach, have a wonderful Yom Tov.